Chicholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Chicholand Podcast. So we took a little break with the international break. We did post a bunch of things for our patrons, but it's great to be back with our regular show. I wanted to come back with a bang. So we have two outstanding guests. We have Napoli Outsider to chat, of course, about his beloved Napoli and a little bit the Italian national team. Our patrons also heard us talk about a bunch of other topics. And then I brought back my friend Alexi Lalas. I wanted to ask him about McKinney at Juve, Lalas being only one of five American players to play in Serie A. So we chatted about that. We also chatted a little bit about David Lee Roth's impact on Van Halen. I think you'll find that interview fun. Mercifully, there are some games coming up in Serie A this weekend. So Thousand Names is ready with his game picks and will do a segment for our patrons, of course. But I'm very excited to be reunited with the co-host, producer of the show, Alex Goldberg. I haven't spoken to him in a while. I know international breaks are rough, especially for him. They're rough for all of us, but Alex really struggles with these. So I wanted to come back with a fun topic. And this is really a hypothetical. I can't stress that enough. This isn't a rumor that I'm starting, but obviously, Dybala and Pogba are very polarizing players right now. And look, Dybala has been linked to Man United before. Pogba has been linked to a return to Juve before. But again, I want to stress this is really more of a hypothetical and an opportunity for us to kind of discuss where these two players are at and some factors to consider for both. So let me ask you this, Alex, very simply. If there was a hypothetical swap between Dybala and Pogba, which club do you think would win that swap?
What a difficult question, honestly. So both these players we know have incredible potential, and if you use them correctly, and that's a whole nother debate for another day, what that even means, well, you're getting phenomenal players. Phenomenal. And then it's tough to even know who has the higher ceiling. Maybe Pogba, just because he's done it a bit more or he's in the midfield. But, meh, my God, their potentials are both fantastic. So Dybala going to United. Now, Pogba going to Juve, just because we know Pogba at Juve has been something good. We know that, yes, Juve was definitely constructed differently then. In fact, his manager was one of his teammates at the time, or his would-be manager, Pirlo,
yeah,
was one of his teammates at the time. But maybe that's a wash. Maybe just having Pirlo there is still nice. Yeah, it's not right next to him in the midfield, but it's coaching him, so that could help. But the Juve then, I mean, with Vidal and Marchisio and the BBC behind Pogba, it did allow Pogba to just be Pogba. So I'm not saying it would just be that Pogba from the old Juve days if he were to go to Juve now. But I do feel he'd find a sense of comfortability again. I feel like it would just feel more right. I know that this is an interesting time for you to ask this question, David, because Pogba has said words again, which always either are controversial or they get spun and then they become controversial.
Yeah.
But he said words where he's definitely more comfortable with his country than his club right now. It wasn't as, I guess, mean as some spun it. He was really just being honest. Obviously, for France, it just all is a bit more free-flowing, and it just looks a lot better. And also, some of that is the way France plays. So I think Juve would be closer to Pogba's France, if that makes any sense. So I'll take that one. With Dybala, it's just such an interesting one, because if you build your team around him, you can still prioritize a few other players as well. I think in football, when you say build your team around one player, doesn't mean that the other 10 players are now going to be out of position. But when you prioritize a player like Dybala and maybe a couple others, well, you're probably going to get a very good version of Paulo Dybala. But United have a lot of attackers with a lot of promise who also have confusing positional conversations behind them. like Rashford, obviously a good player. He's a left winger slash a striker. Greenwood, a right winger slash a striker. We know Bruno Fernandes likes to operate a lot in the middle of the pitch, more forward, of course, kind of in a 10s area. Even if he played an 8, he could be more of a 10. So would that help Dybala? Would that hurt Dybala? Then Martial. Martial, is he a real striker or a fake striker? And I just mean that. Is he a classic striker? Or does he like to kind of roam around as well? Kind of like Dybala. So the positional question marks behind Dybala at United are interesting. And Ole's in charge. And they're not a stable club right now. And actually, that's probably unfair to Ole. They're not a stable club because of their ownership and the people above him. So I would have to say, I'm going to piggyback. I use this a lot these days, David. Your whole line about status quo, this is a bit different, but I'm just saying I know about Pogba and Juve, at least. I just don't know about Dybala and United. So I'm not saying either would be guarantees to be home runs at their next club or in this potential swap, but let me just say Pogba, because I at least have seen him be comfortable and really good at Juventus, and maybe Pirlo could really help him. So, yeah. Now I want to see it happen, to see what really could come from it. Actually, I don't, because Pogba's not a threat to me right now at United these days. And maybe if Dybala worked out, he would be. So I still am tempted to see. All right, David. So now that I've sunk my teeth into this so much, could you see this happening?
Yeah. So first of all, great job. And I appreciated a lot of what you said. I know I've had a lot of back and forth with Man United fans on Twitter. And by the way, I really do love their support and the passion. One thing that you said is, if Pogba goes back to Juve, we know he's done well there. And you're right. It's definitely a different setup. But I'm very confident that if Pogba somehow goes back to Juve, will be like Lukaku at Inter. All of a sudden, this player feels unleashed. He's in an environment where he's comfortable, and he's just going to look very different. So there's a lot of things to unpack with this, and this is why it's perfect for our podcast. So I'm going to take it from a few different angles. Obviously, at Juve, Morata's been great right now, which, I thought he'd be good, maybe not to this extent. Him and Ronaldo have worked well together. Kulusevski's been terrific, as we expected. We also have Chiesa in the mix. So Juve's attack, there's definitely a lot of options there right now. But in my mind, I always see Dybala as really being more important to Juve once Ronaldo moves away from the club. Because in my mind, Dybala, if you put him in a two attacker formation, if it was him and Morata, I think it would work out pretty good. And I think in the right situation, Dybala can be not maybe the biggest star on Juve, but star 1A. So in my mind, Dybala's value to Juve is even bigger in the post-Ronaldo reality, which at some point they will have to deal with. Now, we know Dybala was close to joining Man United not that long ago in that swap with Lukaku. He didn't really want to do the deal. We know there was the issue with the image rights from his first contract with his first agent. There are going to be an issue no matter what, because he is up for a contract renewal in 2022. So right now, Juve has to make a decision on Dybala. He's obviously a very important asset for them because they don't really have any amortized value remaining on him. So he represents a massive plusvalenza that Juve can make if they move him. And there's really not that many players on their squad that fit that profile, because they paid for him a long time ago. They actually got him for a pretty good deal. So if they were to sell Dybala, it would almost be a huge profit. And if Juve has any shot at getting Pogba in their current financial situation, to me, it has to be a swap. Juve is in a very dire financial situation. They asked their players to take a pretty big, significant pay cut. I don't see them being able to fork over the money to pay for Pogba transfer fee, because he still has an amortized value with Man United, and they'd obviously be adding a huge salary. So in my mind, they would have to make a plusvalenza to get to the transfer fee, and they would have to shed a big salary to add his. So look, there are the framework of a deal potentially being there, I don't think there's that many clubs that Dybala can go to, especially in this COVID situation. And I do think in January we are going to see a lot of swap deals. I don't think we're going to see this one in January, but would it shock me that it's discussed again? No, I think there's definitely one to watch. So very interesting stuff there. We are getting closer to the January window, and I'm just going to tell everyone another bold prediction. You're going to see quite a few of those Artur Pjanic type swaps. I think clubs are desperate now to make some plusvalenza, and you can do it with those swap deals. I think there are some players that are looking for a change of scenery. So we can look forward to that. And another thing we always look forward to are game picks with our friend Thousand Names, because we know Serie A is coming back. So Thousand sent me these yesterday. There have been a late development here. So I'm going to read his prediction anyway, but there is an important note here. So as usual, Thousand sends me three games, and I'm going to pick them as well. The first one is Juve hosting Cagliari. Actually, I did read right before we started recording that Godin is out because he tested positive for COVID, and Nandez is also going to be out. So big losses for Cagliari. But that was before 1,000 Names sent me the predictions. He had it 1-1, Rabiot, and a goal by Godin. He says João Pedro is going to miss a penalty and that Di Francesco is going to take Pirlo back to school. And on DAZN, which is the channel that that does one game a week in Italy, Juve never wins. So that's an interesting stat. I don't know if that's true. I'm going to go on the assumption that it happens. And he says that Ronaldo is going to miss João Felix and Bernardo Silva. I got to say, Portugal, really intriguing team. In Italian, Juve Cagliari 1-1, Rabiot Godin, João Pedro sbaglia rigore, Pirlo portato a scuola da Di Francesco. Su DAZN la Juve non vince mai, Ronaldo rimpiange João Felix e Bernardo Silva. So obviously Godin unfortunately is out. I'm going to go with Juve winning this. Nandez also a big loss for Cagliari. I do think, I have to say, I am really pretty optimistic that Juve is going to turn things around. They have a lot of opportunities to improve, and I think they've shown some good flashes, and I think this is where they start putting it together. So I'm going to go Juve 2-0. I'll give a goal to Ronaldo and one to Morata. Next up, Inter hosting Torino. 1,000 has Inter winning 1-0, goal by Lukaku. He says Lautaro is going to get a red card. And he says that with Lukaku coming back, Conte is going to get back into gear to return to the top of the standings. He says Gianpaolo shouldn't really be in Serie A, and that Mazzarri is laughing and dreaming about a return to Torino. Man, that would be fun to see. In Italian, Inter Torino 1-0. Lukaku espulso Lautaro, torna al Belga e Conte riprende la marcia verso la vetta. Gianpaolo improponibile in Serie A, Mazzarri se la ride e sogna il ritorno. Yeah, Torino a hot mess. I also am optimistic that Inter is going to do better. I'm going to go 2-0 Inter, and I'll give a brace to Lukaku here. Last match, probably the best one of the weekend. Napoli hosting Milan. Pioli, unfortunately, is out with COVID. We send them our best. 1,000 has Napoli winning 1-0, goal by Politano. He says Gattuso is going to get revenge on the people that sent him away despite the absences and the injuries, and he's dedicating this to Sandulli. I don't know who that is. I have to look that up. In Italian, Napoli-Milan 1-0. Politano, Gattuso si prende la rivincita contro chi lo ha mandato via nonostante le assenze e gli infortuni, dedicato a Sandulli. So this is a really intriguing match. I'm going to go 1-1. I'm going to go goal by Insigne, who's been playing really well, and Ibrahimovic. Really fascinating game. I will say this. If Milan can somehow win this, I'm going to start saying that they shouldn't maybe just settle for a Champions League spot. If they lose or a draw, I would say for now the ceiling has to be a Champions League spot. If somehow Milan can come away winning this game, then I'll really start to believe they can dream a little bit bigger. than that. Okay, so before we get to our patrons, I'm very excited to welcome my friend Alexi Lalas back on. It was a good chat on McKinney, Van Halen. I think you'll enjoy it, and then we'll get to our patrons. So I'm beyond excited to welcome our next guest. Our friends, listeners in the U.S., they don't really need an introduction for Alexi Lalas. I think a lot of our listeners who are really into Serie A know that he was the first modern American player to play in Serie A. And he's currently the host of a great podcast, State of the Union Pod. He is getting ready to cover the MLS playoffs on Fox, and he was kind enough to spare a few minutes for us today. So, Alexi, it's always a real pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Grazie. Look, it's always a pleasure to hang out with you and to talk about what's happening on and off the field, and obviously the connection of what's going on right now in Serie A, and obviously way back in the 1900s when I was running around.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's start there. I was actually reading a lot of fun quotes when you were in Italy, but let's talk about McKinney, who obviously is now only the fifth American player to join Serie A. You were the first. I wonder if you guys have like a group chat or you guys get together. It's a very exclusive club. But let me ask you, before you heard that McKinney was in Serie A, because I have to admit, that was pretty surprising to me. Were there other players that you thought would get to Italy before he did? Was there someone in mind that you're like, someone is going to join this exclusive club that I'm in? And was there a player you thought would go there first?
Yeah, I mean, I think it actually speaks to the surprise of the McKinney move that he wasn't on my radar. And for a lot of people, he wasn't on the radar. And that's why this move was so amazing. And yet it does, to a certain extent, make sense. So I'd be lying to you if I told you that I saw McKinney as a possibility. I mean, that would be much more in the, I don't know, a Gio Reyna type of sense.
Yeah.
To look at. And it's not that Weston stylistically isn't able to do it. I mean, he's already shown that he's able to figure it out. But like you said, I hope I didn't play a part. I mean, it's been kind of scorched earth for a long time. Not a lot of players have gone over there, and I can't put my finger on it as to why. We all know how much Serie A has changed, and in a certain sense, it should have opened up with the opening of the European community and many more players, especially Italian players, leaving. And yet it hasn't from an American perspective. And that's unfortunate, because I think there's a lot of good American talent that, if given the opportunity, could do as much as a Weston McKinney or anybody else. I have absolutely no doubt that there are players, American players, that if given that opportunity to play in Serie A, could do some wonderful things.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about McKinney specifically, because I'm with you. I think he's actually done pretty well. I think he fits a role at Juve that is kind of needed. So you obviously are very familiar with him as a player. What do you think, and we've already seen it a little bit, but what do you think, what was Juve looking when they were bringing him in, and what do you think he'll continue to bring to the team in the coming months?
So I think they were looking at a player when he was with Schalke that was asked to do almost everything and responded by almost doing everything for them. And so I think this was a real scouting type of coup, in that if you watched him play at Schalke, there's not necessarily in totality something that you would say that this is plug and play. But what they did was they said, you know what? He does everything well. Let's just get him to do one thing great for us, because we don't need him to do a lot of those things.
Yeah.
We need him to get the ball. We need him to tackle. We need him to be that, that defensive type of midfielder that certainly can get forward at different times. But we don't want to ask him to be everything to everybody. We want him to simply get the ball, give it to the players who know what to do with the ball on a consistent basis. And then in moments of set pieces or in transition, or moments when he can use that incredible engine and the physical abilities that he has, he can get involved in the play. And I think we've seen that already, and that's been really, really fun. But that's almost scouting in a nutshell, where you can look at a player And on the surface, he looks like this. And yet you can distill it down to what you need and recognize that's of value to me. If we just say, and it's Pirlo or whoever saying, this is all I want you to do. And if you do that, by the way, you will help us and you can be world class in doing that simple job. And it looks simple from the outside. It's not as simple as we all know when you actually get on the field.
For sure. For sure. So, Alexi, right before we started recording, I was reading some of your interviews in Italy when you were there. So you, I think, you know, you really embrace the image of the American in Italy, your personality. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're a musician, too, and we're going to get into that in a second. But what would you tell McKinney on how he should adapt to life in Italy? Do you even think he should highlight the American thing, maybe play that down? In general, if you were advising him as he adapts to Italy, what would be some of the things you would suggest to him?
Well, I mean, look, he's doing it at a whole nother level in terms of the size of the club. And so it's a little presumptuous for me to tell him from a Juve perspective what to do. But I will say this. The things that help me, immediately you learn the language as quickly as you can. And as you know, the Italians are incredibly forgiving and accommodating, and they just want to see that you have the respect and the care to embrace that culture. And the sooner you're able to do that, the sooner you will be able to communicate. You'll be able to hear things that people are saying about you. You'll be able to obviously see the press and understand the press and how that goes. And as I said, you need all the help you can get when you're an American playing in Italy. And if learning the language and ingratiating yourself to the fans and to the culture gets you that little bit of leeway and that little bit of forgiveness, you might as well do it. So there's a practical reason for doing that. So that's number one. Number two, you know, Weston McKennie is Weston McKennie in part because of that personality. And a lot of that personality is this American kid that, you can't tell me what I can and can't do. I can do it, even if people say it can't be done. And he's already doing some of that by playing at Juve and definitely embrace it. But you also have to harness it. You know, at times I maybe let it get away from me. But ultimately, I don't regret any of that because that's who I was. And if you try to be something that you're not and something that you're not comfortable being, I think it can manifest ultimately in your performance. And it's not to say that he can't evolve and grow. The other day, I don't know if you saw it, but he missed an opportunity, and he already has the hand gestures.
Yeah,
it's amazing how quickly
that was fantastic.
It'll seep into you immediately. It's amazing how that happens. So he's well on his way, and you know, I think he's going to be a fan favorite. But he's also playing in a situation where there's a lot of competition, and you know, he'll have ups and downs, and he's not an automatic starter by any stretch of the imagination. But once again, if he can prove to do that job in that midfield for those other players, he can be very, very valuable very, very quickly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. And obviously you played for my hometown team, Padova, but you are right. Juve is pretty much a very different reality. So well said there. Before we transition.
But a lot of connections too. A lot of Padova connections to Juve though. We know that.
Del Piero and then some. By the way, last time I was there and store in Padova, you are featured equally with Del Piero, which is awesome.
Oh my goodness.
It's awesome. Before we transition to music, because this is what put the bug in my ear to bring you back, tell me a little bit what's going on with the MLS playoffs. Tell me one big storyline you think our listeners should be looking at, and how are you planning on covering it both on the podcast and on Fox?
Yeah, so we kick off, you know, what has been, as we all know, one of the strangest years ever and one of the most difficult and challenging years ever. And so MLS, like every other league, has had to adjust and bob and weave. And there was a stop and start. We had a bubble in the middle of the season. The season hasn't been, it's been stopped and started. We've had COVID situations, obviously no fans, a much more regional type of schedule that's been played. But it still gets to the point where now you're in that playoff situation for MLS Cup. You know, you still have your usual suspects out there when it comes to the Seattles and the Torontos right now. I think one of the big stories is the rise of the Philadelphia Union and how they went about doing it with some really, really shrewd pickups from the international perspective, but also mining the young talent with a guy like Brendan Aaronson or that type of process, I think, is being celebrated right now and rightfully so. But, you know, look, this is this is difficult times for everybody, including MLS. And I think the men and women that work at MLS did a great job over the year of adjusting and adapting, as did the players, to something that's unprecedented. I mean, I've never been through something like that, and I can imagine how difficult it is for the players. A lot of them have had to spend a lot of time, much more time than normal, on the road. And when you talk about the Canadian teams, they couldn't even play in Canada, so they've been living in the lower 48 here playing. So it's not ideal. We recognize it's not perfect. We recognize it's not even fair to a certain extent. But this is just about making the best of a very difficult and what remains a bad situation in 2020. And I think they've done a really good job of making something out of what could have been just a real, you know, problematic type of year. And it's, as I said, it's not perfect. But, you know, we're excited about what it is. And we'll be broadcasting all of that going forward to December, when we have MLS Cup and the 25th year, too. So a year like no other.
To say the least, to say the least. Okay, let's transition to music. And for those not that familiar with you, not only are you a very accomplished, you know, player and now analyst, but you're also a musician who has released quite a few albums. The first time we had you on, I remember we even played one of your songs, and you are very well known in Padova still for your music. And, you know, you've also toured with Hootie and the Blowfish back in the 90s. And, you know, I've been listening to a ton of Van Halen, and I think it's safe to say you are known for being someone who's not afraid to say something. Controversial is maybe not the word, but to be, you know, against the grain. And I was tweeting about, is that fair, right? I think that's one of the things you're known for. Yes. So I've been, I've been listening to a ton of Van Halen. Obviously, I love Eddie Van Halen. I love the band. And I tweeted that, you know, by listening a lot recently, I realized how underrated David Lee Roth, the lead singer and the first incarnation of Van Halen, was. And you tweeted at me very quickly saying that you think David Lee Roth maybe has even more to do with Van Halen's success than Eddie. So tell me a little bit about that. How would you describe what David Lee Roth brought to Van Halen?
David Lee Roth brought the showmanship, and, you know, a lot of, you know, I think he augmented the already, you know, the pop sensibilities that Eddie Van Halen had. And look, Eddie Van Halen is rightfully so celebrated and a legend, a game changer in terms of the way music is played, the way we listen to music, obviously the way the guitar is played. I mean, even keyboard wise, the way they shifted in 1984 is amazing for a virtuoso in guitar to shift, and not only shift to keyboards and synths, but to do so and come out with one of the seminal moments in rock in the 1984 album. So that, you know, that in and of itself is amazing what he's done. But what I was interested in and struck by was the way that it was shaped in, you know, after Eddie Van Halen's death, and the minimalization that I saw occurring when it came to David Lee Roth. And I'm not saying that you were doing that, but I just think that if you don't have these very, very different types of musicians, if they don't come together, neither of them is as good individually. And obviously neither of them, the group that is Van Halen, I don't think could have been anything like what it was. And look, they fought. We know they broke up. We did all of that. And David Lee Roth, I'm sure, is at times difficult to work with, but so is Eddie Van Halen. But when it comes to that specific voice and that specific lyricist, and the way that he found a way to work within, I mean, if you listen to some of the, especially the earlier Van Halen songs, the structure of the song and the dynamics of the song, finding ways to not just slap words on, but slap interesting and artistic words on, and the phrasing and where those words come. I mean, that in and of itself is an art. Now, his voice is very distinctive. He's never going to be looked at as one of the great singers. You know, this isn't a Paul Rogers type of situation or anything like that, but it's not what rock music and rock singing necessarily is about. It's when you hear David Lee Roth, you know it's David Lee Roth. And it was the aesthetic of it and everything. And it was the perfect marriage of this brilliant genius on guitar. But when we're celebrating that brilliant genius, I think it took David Lee Roth to get that brilliant genius to the forefront, because there's a very good chance without that, I think Eddie Van Halen is just one of those guys that some people know about, and he would have been content just kind of playing his guitar anywhere. But you needed that other side, that yin to that yang. And I say it's as important as anything that Eddie Van Halen did. He probably in the long haul won't be given that type of credit, but that's the way that I see Van Halen, and that's the way I certainly see a David Lee Roth.
You know, once you tweeted that to me, like, it made a lot of sense, and I've been thinking a lot about it. So I'm going to take this a step further and ask you if you see David Lee Roth as more as a great frontman than per se a singer, because that's kind of how I see it. And I love that even in the studio album, it's almost like a live vibe that he has to it. So do you see him more as like an amazing frontman that maybe makes up for, you know, some limits with his singing voice? I mean, I would say Sammy Hagar is a better singer, but I'd much rather listen to David Lee Roth era Van Halen. So tell me, what do you think about frontman versus singer with him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. Although I will say that, you know, when it comes to, you know, for example, look first off, the double entendre and all the different creative and interesting and artistic lyrics that he wrote. I mean, I love Sammy. I love Sammy Solo, to be quite honest with you, much more than Sammy with Van Halen. But the actual lyrics, when it comes to Van Halen with Sammy Hagar, it took a very different turn. And when you listen to some of the lyrics and some of the stuff that he wrote, it's just, it's amazing. And I know it's stream of consciousness at times, and it's sometimes it bothers people. So that, I think, from a lyricist perspective, he was immense and very, very important. And just to take a word like jump and make it iconic and have it mean multiple things. It sounds simple because we've heard it so much, but you know, he went out and wrote that song and wrote those lyrics, and they can mean so many different things to so many different people. The other thing is the ad-lib aspect of David Lee Roth, and I think this is to your point in terms of listening to Van Halen, a lot of it sounds like they're all together in the studio and live. And a lot of it is actually calculated, but it comes off as, this is these guys that are on stage and they're in a sweaty club and that's what's going on. So the master of the ad lib. The frustrating thing for me actually is, you know, a lot of the bands, and certainly a lot of the 80s bands, because of the hyper production that went into it, they had a real hard time replicating it live. And you know, that's always frustrating when you go to a show. The interesting thing about when you see David Lee Roth is that what ends up happening is, especially a lot of singers that sing up high, they can't hit those notes, and so you'll see them live, and you know, they'll pick notes lower. The interesting thing when you saw David Lee Roth, and what was so frustrating is he would actually change up the melody of the song and even hit higher notes. And I always thought to myself, this is ridiculous. Just sing the song. If you can actually hit those notes, not only hit them, but you can actually go higher, I don't know why you're changing it around. So it's a very, very strange thing. But, and you know, some of, you know, Dave's stage patter is legendary. It's actually almost, it has become kind of like songs. You know, look at all the people here tonight and that type of stuff. I mean, so yes, he is the ultimate showman. And that's what that type of band and that type of party needed. You needed that MC, and he was that. And he never claimed to be the best singer, but you know, look, who's the best singer? I can't tell you what the best singer anymore is than I can tell you what, you know, the best looking person is, or the best wine, or the best food, or the best piece of art. It's subjective.
Yeah. So let me just ask you this real fast, because you are both a singer and a guitarist. Like, to you, in a way, what is harder, to really sing at a top level? Guitar? Like, are there times where you're like prouder of one versus the other?
Yeah. I mean, if you can. I think the hardest thing is vocals, because that relies on your body. And look, I love guitarists and I love guitaring, but ultimately you can be sick in body and still make the guitar sing. And that's so. And I know they say it's an extension and all that kind of stuff, but look, the vocalists out there that are able to do it day in and day out and year in and year out and have that mastery and that control of their voice to give the people what they want and a good approximation of what you hear on record, I think that is a, I mean, look, a lot of it's, yes, it's skill, and yes, you can work on it to make it better, Well, a lot of it's innate and God-given, and I am in awe of the people that are able to replicate and do that and have the control of their voice in multiple settings and different audio and different venues and all this kind of stuff, as opposed to, you know, just plugging in the guitar, you have the exact same type of sound. And look, I'm not discounting any of the incredible wizardry and just legendary talent that someone like Eddie Van Halen has, but I just think it's a whole lot more difficult when you're dealing with something human of flesh and yeah. blood that you're having to do on a continual basis.
Yeah, I had a feeling you would answer that, and that makes sense. I mean, I have to say, I genuinely like Alexi's music, not just because he played for my hometown team. I think it's great music if you're on a road trip, if you're driving. It's really fun rock, so check it out. So, Alexi, I can't thank you enough for doing it. I had a blast. Definitely check out State of the Union Pod. Follow the MLS playoffs with Alexi on Fox. And thanks so much for doing this, my friend. I had a great time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's always a pleasure. Grazie mille. Okay.
Okay. I'm very excited for what's becoming now a monthly tradition on Calcioland to have our dear friend, the Napoli Outsider. So we do this in two parts on the regular podcast. You'll hear us chat about Napoli. Today, we're going to throw in a little bit about the Italian national team because I'm very curious to get his thoughts there. And then for our patrons, we are going to have our monthly chat on Serie A. And I think for this episode, we picked some really good topics. So without further ado, welcome back to our dear friend, Napoli Outsider, Bentornato to Calcioland. Always a real pleasure to chat with you.
Always great to be with you guys. How's it going?
Awesome. Well, international break's been pretty tough. I know for Napoli, especially with Osimhen and whatnot. But let's try to recalibrate and look at the season so far. We have a somewhat decent sample size so far to talk about. So let me ask you this. Of Napoli, what has surprised you in a positive way? And what has disappointed you about the team so far?
Well, positive is the fact that we hit the ground running once we changed our style of play. I thought, Gattuso would struggle a bit in the beginning to shove it down some of the players' throats after what happened last year, you know, between the 4-3-3, the 4-2-3-1, and so on, the vertical style of play. But it worked. It worked really well, and so I am really happy about that. And also the consistency of play has been actually pretty good on a team level. What disappointed me, on the other hand, was what happened with, for example, Dries Mertens, who started the season great, but then he just tailed off, and Napoli absolutely need him to play with a little more consistency up front. And, you know, he is there. He's got it because, for example, now with Belgium, he's just coming off a very good performance in the international break. So, you know, if he's going to be there and if he's going to play well, I think Napoli are going to do great. But aside from some of the individual performances, there isn't a lot of things. There aren't many things to be disappointed with after this start to the season. Napoli have to stick their head into it and keep being consistent. That's really all they have to do. But so far, so good. You know, I just don't want to get too excited because Napoli have shown that once they get into a negative momentum, they struggle in getting out of it. So, you know, it's always behind the corner. That being said, so far, so good. We are at the end of November, and there's a lot of there's a lot to be excited about.
I agree. And Mertens is a good point. I mean, he did sign a big extension at, up there in age. Do you think the way Lozano has been playing kind of makes up for that? I always kind of felt like Napoli, as you've always tell us, try to play the anticipo, as we would say in Italy. They always try to anticipate moves. Do you feel at least Lozano's making up for a lot of what's missing from Mertens?
Well, facts say yes. In fact, even Politano has been way, way better than expected. But again, the facts say yes, but that has been true so far. If you want to do well over the whole season, yeah, you can have like Mertens switch off for 2-3 weeks. But not more than that, because you need him. So far, Napoli have been able to compensate for it, but they're not going to be able to compensate the whole season. So he needs to get back into it and do it fast.
Absolutely. So aside from Mertens performing better, what else needs to happen for Napoli to be a contender for the Scudetto? I think most people at the beginning of the season had kind of Juve and Inter on their own tier. Napoli kind of with Atalanta as an outsider team. I think now Napoli is definitely better than that. But what needs to happen for Napoli to be in contention for the Scudetto until the end of the season?
Stay consistent. I mean, and stay with your head into the game. Napoli's worst performances have been have come after some complacent approaches to the game. You know, once they think they've won it, once they think they have an easy opponent, that's what they really struggle with. The first half against Rijeka in the Europa League, that was absolutely a nightmare. That was the worst performance I've seen under Gattuso in 2020, probably. It's just terrible because they went into the game and they thought they already had it in their pockets and they were losing. Then they came out in the second half and they turned it around. But you cannot afford to do that in Italy. You cannot afford to do that anywhere on a consistent basis. You have to be in the game from the first minute of the first half. Against Benevento, much of the same. You know, you lose easy points against easy teams just by having a poor approach. So it's more of a mental thing. And so far, they have been able to correct it. So far, they haven't been too hurt about from this. But, you know, they lost 3 points against Sassuolo. They lost 3 points against AZ Alkmaar. And, in fact, I'm not surprised that this happened at home. You know, they felt mm-hmm. a little too confident. But when they battle, when they get into it from the first minute, it's very different. The performances against Atalanta or Real Sociedad, who are probably the top two teams they face this year, have been incredible, really. They didn't risk anything at the back, and they scored, I don't want to say easily, but they were incredibly consistent. The problem is that you see the difference in approach once they start using this approach in every game. I think, you know, it's going to be different. But the question is, will they be able to do it for the whole season? And so that's really what the question is about. And we'll see the answer on the pitch.
Okay. So now let's get into some more hypothetical things now that we took stock of the season and what needs to happen the rest of the way. So we've talked a lot about Gattuso. I think we're both pretty impressed. You mentioned at the top the change, you know, in style, formation, that's playing well. So let me ask you this. If you could exchange Gattuso for any current manager in Serie A, who would you take, if any, for this current Napoli or, you know, in general?
Well, first of all, let me say this. Considering only the games that Napoli actually played, they're first in the table. So right now, I wouldn't change it with anybody. I mean, he deserves all the accolades he's getting, and he mm-hmm. deserves to just keep going with his adventure there, because, you know, you can't do any better than being first. So that's leaving that aside. But suppose that we have to replace him. Well, the top two coaches this year, and maybe not this year, but even at the end of last year in Serie A, are Juric and De Zerbi. You got to admit that they've just been way too good, and they're young. While they do have a different style of play, and by the way, they're going to face each other in a couple of days, but while they have a different style of play, I think they both play in a fresh way, in a very modern way, and I think they're ready to step up from their current teams into a new dimension. Now, obviously, it depends on what you want. If you want intensity, you go for Juric. If you want mm-hmm. Possession-based style of play, a little more positional, you go for De Zerbi. Now, obviously, you look at the way Napoli are set up, the way their roster is set up, and I think they're more suited for De Zerbi rather than a guy like Juric. Yeah. But I would be happy with either one of them because they have shown the ability to adapt to their rosters. They're not that kind of coach, and I think we're going to mention a couple maybe later, but they're not that kind of coach that always wants the same type of players, that cannot adapt to different rosters. So given how young they are and given what they've been able to accomplish, but especially given the fact that they're getting better, you know, they used to have some, let's say, some faults that they've worked upon. So I think they're showing some margin of improvement, and it would have to be one of them. And if I had to really say just one, it's probably going to be Roberto De Zerbi.
Wow. Okay, great. I'm excited. All right, let's talk about another hypothetical. And this is a question I've been wanting to ask you for a while. So obviously we've seen the impact that Ibrahimovic is having at Milan. Really remarkable what he's done. And, you know, when he signed with Milan, there was some potential buzz on Napoli being a destination for him. In recent years, Napoli has developed a great relationship with his agent, Mino Raiola. De Laurentiis and him seem to work well together. So let me ask you this. What would have happened, in your opinion, had Ibrahimovic signed with Napoli instead of Milan?
Well, I think now we can say life would have been easier from many points of view. I mean, it's incredible to see an almost 40-year-old dominate to this extent in Serie A. I'm not even sure it's good news for Serie A. As great as Ibrahimovic is. I mean, it's just, come on, man. He's 40. I'm sure he should be good. He should be one of the best players. But first of all, he shouldn't be able to last 90 minutes every game. But he has been able to do that. And I think that's an indictment of Serie A's rhythms. Because one thing is to be able to dominate for 45 minutes or even 60. But, you know, against Udinese, he decided the game in the 83rd minute. And he was still looking like one of the freshest guys on the pitch. And that should not happen. That being said, it is happening. So obviously, if Napoli had him, oh man, that would have been so much easier. And not because I think Osimhen is not doing well. I think he's doing very well despite scoring only two goals. But the thing is, Ibrahimovic is giving Milan so many opportunities. For example, you know, Milan have obviously been playing well, but let's say they're struggling in transitioning the ball from the defense to the offense. He can just kick it up there, and he's going to defend it. He's going to protect it. He's going to let the team come up, you know, give depth to the team. He's winning a boatload of aerial duels. I was actually looking up his stats the other day, and he has won over twice as many aerial duels as opposed to the second-best guy in Serie A this year so far. That's Dzeko, among forwards. Mm. So basically, you can just give the ball to Ibrahimovic, and it's like kicking it to the bank. He's going to defend it and everything. And so the thing is, if you have that opportunity, you know, which is something that not that many teams have, then teams have to respect that. So they have to double team him sometimes, and that's going to open up spaces for other players. So that's the tactical aspect of it. You know, he's just going to give you a lot. But I think what really would have changed with Napoli is not so much that, but the personality aspect. Because he's a true leader, and I think that what Napoli have been lacking probably in the last 18 months or so, if anything, was really leadership. Having somebody like him, having somebody who's going to take your hand and just lead you, and that's something that I think Napoli have really been missing. But having a guy like him, you know, somebody you can rely on, somebody who can just carry your team when needed, that would have been a game changer, an absolute game changer. And now, obviously, again, as I was saying, Napoli, if you consider only the games they've played, they are first on the table. But with Ibrahimovic, I would be definitely more confident about them staying with their heads into the games. I mean, I don't think you would have seen the complacency in certain approaches, just like I was mentioning a little earlier on with Ibrahimovic. You would not have seen that. You would have seen a lot more fight into them. And I mean, I think that's what would have made a difference, really. So the mental approach and the leadership, the personality, the character, all that kind of stuff, which is probably the area in which Napoli could do better.
Yeah, and it feels in a lot of ways that's one of the reasons why they brought in Gattuso, was to kind of make up for that. And you're right, they haven't had a player that does that in a while. Well, there definitely was a player that had a huge impact on Napoli, and that's really understating it. So during the international break, Maradona turned 60. And look, you could do a whole podcast just answering this question, but Give just us one? A sense. We can just one, right? Yeah, quite a few. But just give us a sense of what Maradona means to Napoli, the region. Like, again, we could go on for hours about this, but tell us a little bit. Give us a sense of what he means to the club and the region.
This is a fantastic question, which is really hard to answer in a few words, but I'll try to give you an idea. The thing is, a lot of guys, especially under 30, they don't quite understand what the hype is about. I mean, obviously, they see the brilliance of the player, but they don't understand why he's considered, at least by Napoli fans, and I would say by actually a sizable amount of fans around the world,
yeah.
Like, you know, why was he considered the greatest ever? You have guys who have scored a lot more than him. You've got plenty of guys who won a lot more than him. And you have a lot of guys who lasted more than him. Obviously, I mean, Maradona, you have to say, he was pretty much done as a top player by the time he was 31. So what makes him such a legend? And I think you have to go beyond what he did on the pitch. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
I can offer you absolutely technically based account of things, you know, something that's just based on his performances on the pitch. I could tell you that back in the day, he would just get four or five fouls that today would be sanctioned with the red card, you know, and at the time
yeah.
they didn't even get yellow carded. So if he just had that style of play today, he would just be even more dazzling because he would be protected by refs. And at the time, this wasn't happening. But I think it doesn't really have to do with any of that. I think it has to do with his personality and how he carried himself. Now, obviously, he was a very flawed man, especially
mm-hmm.
off the pitch. He did a lot of bad things, and there's no defending him for that. But it's all part of who he was. Now, you have to understand, I don't want to make this too long, but you have to understand that Naples, the city, ever since being reunited with the rest of Italy, has always suffered.
Mm-hmm.
In part, especially in the beginning, from economic discrepancies. Now, there are so many historic reasons that I don't want to turn this into a history lesson. But the thing is, once Italy was reunited, a lot of factories were taken up north. A lot of resources were taken up north.
Yeah.
Napoli, obviously, was the part of the kingdom of the two Sicilies. And ever since that, there has been I don't want to say resentment, but there has been a breakdown in relations between the north and the south in Italy. And Neapolitans always felt that there was some unfairness, some bullying going on. And you might argue whether that's true or not, but it's obviously true that the south is a lot poorer, not just Naples, but the south in Italy is a
yeah.
lot poorer than the north, and they've always been angry for this. Now, when Maradona came to town, he change things around. Now you're going to say, how can soccer or football or whatever you want to call it vindicate an entire population? Well, it can. It can
mm-hmm.
and it did. He changed everything because at the time, you know, Napoli, yes, everybody loved the team. They had never won a single league. But the truth is, when he came to town, you felt like there was a superhero. There was somebody finally who was going to defend you, who was going to stand up to the bullies, take it to them, and, you know, shut their mouths up and make turn wrongs into rights. He was a legend and an icon because of that. He was way beyond the simple sports or football aspects of it. He was that kind of guy. I mean, some of his performances were legendary because, well, kind of what I mentioned with Ibrahimovic, he was Atlas. He was keeping the world on his shoulders. He was Superman. He was Batman. He was everything you wanted. You know, he was the entire Justice League. I mean, he was just gonna do anything, you know, to protect you. He was gonna defend you. And see, the thing is, I don't really agree with many of his political stances, but there's no question that he always stood up for the weak in his life, Maradona.
Yeah.
On and off the pitch. And that was, you know, today a lot of footballers are just their own brands, their businesses. And I'm not going to argue with that. I mean, they have to live their own lives like that. But Maradona was a lot more than that. I mean, there's the time as the top player in the world, he went to play on a muddy field just to raise money for prisoners who really needed it. And today this just would be unthinkable. They would just write a check to those guys if they had to, and only if they could benefit you know, their own image brands and stuff like that. But at the time, Maradona just went, you know, it was just so illogical, but he did it because he thought it was right, the right thing to do. And see, this is something that has been going on for his entire career, not just with Naples, in Naples or with Napoli, but with Argentina as well. When you think about this, in 1986, the greatest single performance against England came just on the heels of the Falklands-Malvinas War. Now, for a bit of historical context, Argentina were just whipped badly by England in that war, okay? And so that match wasn't just a football match. That was essentially an extension of the war. And what does Maradona do? Oh, nothing, man. He just takes it out on England, just humiliates them, first by scoring with his hand. Now, he scored with his hand, but the thing is, in that game, you know, Argentinians, I'm pretty sure, they enjoyed the goal scored by his hand a lot more.
Yeah, probably, for sure.
Just because it was against England, because they wanted, you know, again, there was some war resentment. And first he does that, and then he scores the greatest goal ever scored just to reassert his superiority. I mean, that went so much beyond a single game. And obviously they went on to win the World Cup with a very weak team. With Napoli, he did much of the same. Again, he stood up to what were guys who were seen like the northern bullies. And he didn't just stand up to them. He just carried the team and the city. He vindicated the population. And he offered hope to a population. And in fact, Naples as a city actually picked itself up in those years because there was desperation and there was, people were kind of resigned to not having any hope. And he actually, through football, he gave hope to an entire city, an entire population. He showed that you can do things. And that is so, so way beyond any expectation. One of his greatest moments, I think, with Napoli came match against Juventus. Obviously, it had to be, actually.
Yeah.
Before that match, Tacconi, who obviously today has a lot of alcohol problems and arguing, you know, arguably he had them back in the day as well.
I think so.
Yeah, before the match, he spends a whole week bad-mouthing Southerners, not just Neapolitans, but Southerners, with terms that today would be defined as racist. And that was actually, I don't want to say normal at the time, but definitely more normal than these days. So he just says, we're going to go down there. We're going to humiliate them and everything. And so, you know, normally back in those days, so many would just slump their shoulders, put their heads down, and that would be that. And Juventus would come and either win or just look good. But not with Maradona on the pitch. He just had a great performance, an absolute stunner. And at some point, there was a foul in the box for Napoli. Now, if you see it, because I know the goal I'm going to mention, everybody sees it, but nobody knows how it originated. I'm talking about the free kick inside the box.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a free kick inside the box given for an absolute crazy foul. A Juventus player just kicked the head of a Napoli player. And it's not like the head of the Napoli player was down, it was up. And the Juventus defender just goes studs into the head of the Napoli player. It was an absolute clear penalty. The referee gives a free kick for dangerous play. Now, that alone would have been enough. You know, again, Napoli players would have felt, oh, this is an injustice. We're never going to win. The referee is also against us. Juventus are way too good on one hand. And if they're also going to be helped, there's never going to be a way in which we can beat them, and so on and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
What happens? They place the ball down. The ref only puts the wall about 6 yards away from the ball. And the ball is obviously inside the box. So there's just absolutely no way anything can be done about it. And the ball has to be, it's an indirect free kick also because it's a dangerous play. But they touch the ball and Maradona just takes one step to the ball and curls it in the top corner over the wall. And then the ball comes down. There shouldn't have been enough space to do that. I mean, that's just physics defying. Okay? It shouldn't have been possible, but it is. And again, what happens? What happens? Tacconi ends up in the back of the net with the ball. And again, this is the thing. He didn't just win the game. He didn't just do something superb. He humiliated the loudmouth. He just shut him up with facts, and there was nothing Neapolitans would have enjoyed more. It wasn't just the win. It was the way it came, you know. So there was a presumed injustice, something that was felt as an injustice. He punished the guy who actually spoke about it. He punished the team that was allowing that to happen. He beat up the bullies, and all the while, he showed his own superiority. I mean, and again, he did that for years and years and years. And just the fact that he did that with weaker teams, let's say, in Argentina and Napoli, just didn't show his greatness. Because, obviously, again, he had a short prime due to his off-the-field, off-the-pitch deficiencies. And he didn't win as much as he could have. But the way he did things and the people for whom he did those things, well, that just changes the outlook of what he did. I mean, he was a legend. You look at what Napoli were doing before he arrived, and you look at what Napoli did right after he left, and you see how much he really was worth. But it's not just that. Again, I mean, it's the fact that he vindicated populations. He took it way beyond football. And I'm sorry about great players like, you know, Messi, Ronaldo the Phenom, and so on. All those guys, those are great footballers. Great technical skills. They won everything. They've scored so many goals, so many beautiful goals. They've done everything right in their careers. But they are sports guys. They're players. They're soccer players. Maradona is an icon, a legend, a social legend. I mean, a civil legend. It's way beyond sports. And I don't think this can be conveyed enough in just a few minutes of an answer. And I don't think it can be conveyed, especially to someone who's less than 30 and didn't live through those years, doesn't know what it meant for entire populations. But the thing is, you look at Messi and, you know, after 90 minutes, the game is over. You might have enjoyed what he did. Yes, sure, great, but it's all about soccer. Back in the day, Maradona gave hope to populations. You cannot make that up. And, you know, if you think that I'm overstating what soccer means to Naples or to Argentina, you know, I know it can feel that way, especially if you've lived a privileged life in a nice spot where you've never suffered from perceived or true discrimination. But that's what Maradona did. He tilted the table, and he just changed everything. He changed the life of people, and you cannot make that up, and you cannot compensate with that by just being a great footballer. It's beyond that, and it's something that's never going to happen again, probably, even because in certain cases you need the scenario. You need the right scenario. I mean, for example, if you go play for Juventus, if you go play for Milan, if you go play for Barcelona or for Manchester United, you just cannot be in that situation because, you're with a privileged team. You are, and that's also why Neapolitans love him so much, and these days they don't appreciate guys like Higuain or Sarri because they sold out to the powerful. Maradona fought the powerful. And that's the difference. He stood up to the bullies. He didn't join them to win. He didn't join them for the money. He didn't join them for the trophy. He stood up to them, and he gave hope to the weak. And that's it. There's a world of difference.
Well, we've done a lot of shows together, but I think this is my favorite answer. You tied it up beautifully, as you normally do, with history and everything. Very, very well played. The only thing I can add to that is, you know, as someone who grew up as a Juve fan because of Platini, there was no player in my entire life that I feared more as an opponent than Maradona. That's at the club level when Argentina played against Italy in Napoli. Do I think Messi's more consistent, better play overall? Sure. But there's no player I feared more than Maradona as an opponent. And I think you did a fantastic job explaining the cultural impact. But let's switch gears. Let's talk about the Azzurri, who I have to say I've been very, very impressed with recently. I think it's hard to imagine any manager doing a better job than Mancini has so far. So let me ask you a very open-ended question. What do you make about this current Azzurri team?
I think Mancini, well, he's been very impressive, true. And I think they're a strong team. Now, obviously, they really lack a quality finisher, a quality center forward, because Immobile has never been able to replicate his performance, his club performance with the national team. And I think that Mancini understood that he's got, his strength is in midfield quality. So he's got guys who can play one or two touch football, positional style football. He decided to go for that style of football, and he has been repaid by it, because Napoli, Italy, Italy holds up the ball a lot, which is also a really good defensive strategy, because again, if we have the ball, it means that they don't have it. And if they don't have the ball, they can't score. So it's not just about scoring, it's also about defending. And if you can hold up the ball, then you can afford to have a slightly weaker defense, because obviously you're, it's not going to be as exposed. And so what happens is there's a lot of possession. It falls right down Broadway with some of the Italian players. It really works well for them. So, you know, congratulations for him for finding the appropriate style of play to the roster and not forcing the roster onto a different style of play. I think that's what really made the difference. I don't know what the ultimate potential is, because obviously there are some teams that are just way better, like for example France, obviously probably Spain as well, but it is working, and so I think there's a it's enough to call it a resurrection for Italy. I don't think they're the favorites to win the European Championships or the World Championships, but they're probably back in the top six or seven national teams in the world at this point.
Yeah, I agree. And what a remarkable turnaround. So obviously Insigne has been playing well for the Azzurri, and Jorginho too. I was reading Gazzetta dello Sport today. They were highlighting both of them. But I have to say, if I had to pick one player on the Azzurri right now that I think is the best Italian player at the moment, I would pick Barella. Do you agree, or is there another player? And you can't say Donnarumma. A lot of people have come at me with that. I get that. That's kind of a cop-out answer. But is there any player you take over Barella right now on the Azzurri?
Well, first of all, you mentioned Jorginho and Insigne, and obviously those are guys who really starred in a positional style of play, possession style of play, with Sarri. So obviously, even though there are some clear differences between what Mancini does and what Sarri did, the style of play is very similar. So they're obviously very suited for it. So it's obvious that they're looking good with it. And Barella, he's in a kind of an Allen role, obviously.
Yeah.
So he's also really suited for it in a different way. But he is. And you make a really good point. He has been the best player so far, probably. Although, you know, I would make an argument for Insigne as well, because he's been so good. And you saw him against Poland.
Yeah.
He was the best man on the pitch. He is just... So it's probably between those two. But I'm going to throw you a curveball here. And Moise Keane. Now, he looked like he was a lost talent. He looked like he was a lost talent. But look at what he's done with Paris Saint-Germain in these first few months. He hasn't come through for the national team yet, obviously. But you've got to tie that up with the Immobile and Belotti struggling as the center forwards for the national team. Now, if Keane can keep that kind of form, and if he can finally blossom into what he seemed to be promising for so long for Italy, then that's going to be a world changer for Italy. Now, he has benched Icardi with Paris Saint-Germain. He has been scoring a lot. He has been looking absolutely great. And obviously, in Italy, they're not paying as much attention to him because he plays abroad. But again, he's right now the starting center forward for Paris Saint-Germain, who are one of the top teams in the world, and he's doing great in that role. He doesn't seem out of place with Mbappe and Neymar, and I think that's kind of a compliment out there, right? So far, yeah, probably he hasn't been as good as Barella or Insigne, but he is up there. He's probably the third best, and if he keeps it up that way, you ask me 1 month from now, I'm going to give you his name. I think he's just warming up, and but I want to be optimistic about him because there hasn't been much to cheer about from Italian youngsters in recent years beyond Donnarumma, probably. Even Zaniolo, who is one of my favorites, he keeps breaking down, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, and the Chiesa has been disappointing, and so many others have been disappointing. I really want to put my hopes into this kid because it looks like he's turning the corner. Maybe what he needed was a move to Paris Saint-Germain and trust from his coach. So far, again, he's been probably almost as good as Insigne and Barella. So he's just not under the spotlight of the Italian league for Italian league fans. But, yeah, he's got to be up there right now. I wouldn't have believed this just 6 weeks ago. But, yeah, I'm going to throw his name into the hat.
I love it. And my friend Alex Frosio also compared these Azzurri to Sarri's Napoli. And, yeah, it's definitely a lot of parallels. So great stuff. So I hope you guys enjoyed that chat. It's going to continue on for our patrons. We have a lot of hot topics on Serie A to get to, my friend.